Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so what I'd like to do, a couple of things here. I got into a little bit about someone that had come in. I like to use real life examples as often as I can. Of course, I change the information, change it around. So even if you think you know who it is, it's not them, okay? So I had a person come in, and I was telling the story yesterday on the program about someone that come in and had money that they wanted to invest. And we basically figured out very quickly that this money was money she had inherited. And so it was very special to her, which it is for a lot of people that inherit money. They put a special attachment. We especially see that with people with when it's not just cash, but they see it even with a specific security. And I've written about this in the column that I write for the news journal. But I've also seen this really be pronounced when we talk about individual stock, but not just then, where somebody says, well, I'm really attached to IBM because, you know, dad worked for IBM or dad worked for GE or mom worked for that company and she always kept it. I'm talking about beyond that, even when it's just cash money, that there's nothing special about that cash itself, but what it represents. And so that was a story I was sharing with you. And so I determined that the person, the lady that came in and met with me, she really wanted that money to be safe. And so I was using this as an opportunity to describe, and I went through her and I pulled out my book, and I was looking for this when I was telling the story with you yesterday, that we went through the at-risk and not-risk choices. And I think this is what really, when you start looking at how you're going to invest and wherever you are at whatever stage of life, this is something to think about very carefully. If you are like this woman is, she's in her 60s. She's already thinking about when she might need to use this money. She views it as a way to supplement her income in the future. And like a lot of women, and I've read studies and different writings about this, there's a lot of women who actually, even women that would otherwise, people would say, hey, they're successful, they have assets, they are a person of means, still have a real fear of ending up without any money or ending up a bag lady, if you will. That is not a joke. A lot of people that you wouldn't think would feel that way actually have that feeling. And so when you start looking at how you're going to invest your money, one of the things that you need to think about is, am I willing to accept risk? In other words, see, risk, it's a two-sided coin. It can have, of course, the opportunity and the growth and the excitement of money going, things, your stock or your investments going up in value. And it's intoxicating. And I'll be sharing a couple other stories with you to really illustrate that point. But when it goes south, it brings on as powerful, if not more powerful, emotions about a sick feeling of that loss and guilt and frustration and anger. And so you want to be real clear with yourself as you think about how you want to invest. And when I was working with this woman, we figured out pretty quickly that none of the choices that I might otherwise recommend to her of, you know, stocks, preferred stocks, common stocks, mutual funds that are investing in those things, bonds or mutual funds that are in bonds, REITs, real estate investment trust, variable annuities, all of these things are securities and they are at risk, which me and part of the definition of a security is it can go up and down. Down is the key part. We'll take the up, it's the down. So we very quickly figured out that wasn't for her. So then I turned the page literally from page 99 to page 100 in my book. And I said, let's talk about your safe choices. And you know what? There, in this environment today, there's not that many of true safety. Now, of course, the caveat is with bonds and commercial paper and some of these types of things. If you buy a bond and you hold it to maturity, you'll get your money back. But the company's got to be there to pay it back. So bonds are securities, and this is why advisors very often don't recommend putting a lot of money into just a handful of bonds. And I've just thought of a gentleman off the top of my head just now that he, when he came to me a few years back, he had his money, $250,000 in like three bonds. And I was like, wow, that's a lot in just a couple of bonds. And so I talked to him and I advised him about diversifying, and that's what we did. And we're glad because if one of those bonds failed, meaning the company went under or they went through an acquisition or something happened where those bonds lost value or became worthless, you know, we could start talking about companies that have failed. Lehman Brothers, Enron, you know, back in their day, they were just all that, as the kids say, right? They were just all that, but they're not bulletproof. So bonds are not bulletproof and they can go down in value. So Lisa's telling me I need to take a quick break. I'm going to come back from the break and talk about your not at risk or your much safer choices, and then tell you a couple things to be on the lookout for. So stay tuned.
Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. Okay, well, that commercial Lisa popped in for me was very relevant to the conversation, because that's what I'm talking about, is not at risk versus risk. You know, the rule of 100, you take 100, you subtract your age, and there you have the, not the facts of life, but rather the amount of money that should be in the market versus not. So if you're 70, generally speaking, about 70% of your money should not be in the market, and 30% could be. And when we say market, really saying at risk. So if you have, let's use simple math, we have $100,000 and you are 70 years old, then 30%, and again, I'm setting aside you've got cash money for emergencies and you've got other things situated, you've got insurance, you've got, you know, health insurance, you've got those other things taken care of, but you're talking about your investments, then 30% of 100 is 30,000, then that amount would be in stuff that can lose or gain. So what would that be? Well, turn back to page 99. Common stocks, preferred stocks, mutual funds, variable annuities, commercial paper, those are corporate IOUs, REITs, bonds. Those are all things that can go up and down, hence they're a security, and hence they're at risk, and hence they're that 30% that is part of your rule of 100 that you can afford, generally speaking, to let be at risk. Where's the other 70% or 70,000 go if you're 70 years old and you're trying to adhere to this rule of 100? Well, then you've got a few choices. You may not like them, but here they are, okay? Cash, money market, CDs, fixed annuities. Those are the four primary things that you can put your money in that don't go down in value. Now you say, well, David, what about treasury bonds or T-bills? Or yes, full faith and credit of our country. But guess what? They can fluctuate in value. Part of our daily report on the Fastest Five that Scott gives you includes talking about the change in the value of the 10-year treasuries. We talk about how much the tens have changed. So they change in value. If you bought a treasury bond on the market, if you hold it to maturity, you'll get the face value, but it can go down in value. How about that? So back to my original story that prompted all of this, I very quickly figured out with a woman who was trying to protect her inheritance that we needed to be focused on these safer things. But we decided that we would do a mix. We would put about, I think it worked out to be about 20% of the money into maybe a low risk, still risk, but low risk conservative portfolio. For example, put it at Fidelity. That's where we hold money when we manage it here at Holland Financial. Hold it at Fidelity. We're going to put it in our conservative portfolio, lower risk, primarily no-load funds, ETF, exchange-traded funds, index funds, and put more probably into bonds with that type of portfolio than we would stocks, but still very, very diversified using no-load funds. Several different mutual funds, not just one fund family. Mixing up, trying to get like an all-star team, the best of the best. So that is what we're going to do for the part that we're willing to put at risk. And again, just a small part for her because she really wants to protect this money. And then the other, we're going to talk about some of these other choices, CDs, money market, cash, and maybe a fixed annuity. Now, you hear those and you say, well, I know the money market is not going to pay any interest, neither will cash. CD, USA Today reported here, I think it was this morning or the day before, that we had a 5-year CD of 0.91%. Yoo-hoo! Okay, so less than 1% is the average for a 5-year CD. It is what it is, right? Now, of course, the obvious problem, as you hear that, not only does that not feed the bulldog, as they say, it's not very much interest, but if inflation, let's say inflation ends up being 3% for 2012, well, then if somebody had a CD for 1 year earning 1% and inflation's 3, guess what? You got a negative 2% return after adjusting for inflation. You've lost money. So the fourth choice was a fixed annuity. Now, the fixed annuity, what's the advantage, disadvantage? Well, it has the potential to earn more, of course, than the CD based on where rates are today. Also has the ability to give you a guarantee of income. They offer the ability to have payments for the rest of your life. But you got to make a commitment. It's not a checking account, and the company's going to want you to commit for a period of time so they can use that money to invest it themselves. So I wanted to finish the story, if you will, about at risk, not at risk, and doing what's right for you, because when you think about your situation, I just met with another couple, and I'll come back and finish talking about this, where they came in and met with me. The husband is very concerned about making sure the wife's needs are going to be met if something should happen to him. What a great guy. I'm so glad he's doing that for her, because if something happens to him, her income will go down because his pension will stop. So in talking with them, it's clear they don't want much risk, so we need to focus on the things that aren't going to lose. All right, another quick break. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
I'm back, and I'm preaching big time today, but it's only because I care and I really want to help people, and I'm hoping you find this useful. So I was sharing with you a recent story of somebody coming in and meeting with me and the husband saying, look, if something happens to me, my pension stops. I want to make sure that she's going to be taken care of. And, you know, as I talked to them, it became very clear, and I just mentioned this to you a minute ago, but it's real. This is not some study of people on another planet or in another state. It's everywhere, especially women, men too, but especially women, a real fear of not being able to provide for ourselves and becoming dependent on other people, children, or the government. And so as we talked it through, there was a clear message I heard of, I need income, I need safety, I want to be protected. So that dictates what type of financial products or investments they should have. You know, and let me really hit this point. I've seen several, unfortunately, I've seen more than a few women lately that have lost their husbands, and I'm working with a few of them now that are my clients, and it's sad to see that happen, of course, for them and for their loss. But the silver lining, I guess, is that because they've taken the time to meet with a planner, happens to be me, hopefully they choose somebody, you know, the old hospital charter said, if you don't get help from us, get help from someone. And so if you don't get help from me, please get help from someone. But the silver lining is that they had established a relationship with a planner to make sure that they were planning not only for their life together and the income they would need and what they want to do, but also that survivorship scenario. And so it reminded me of a story I wrote up, actually, for it was published in a magazine, and I'm going to borrow from it. And the title of the story was, You Got to Know What You Don't Know. And so Abigail, and again, I've changed names to protect the identity. Abigail just shrugged at my questions. Her husband had just died. She didn't know where the money had gone. And she had been concerned about their finances because Albert, he always took care of everything. We sat and reviewed her investments or what was left of them in my office. She kind of wondered out loud and said, you know, I don't know what was going on before Albert died. He had dealings with various financial advisors that used to call the home. And, you know, she also wondered about during late in life, he was getting confused and his memory was slipping. And she wondered if that might have something to do with the loss of their very sizable investment portfolio. But most importantly, she asked how she would pay the bills. True story. This is a woman that came in a few years back and literally was saying, I've got a big house, I've got big bills, and we had a big investment account, but I do not know what happened to it, because Albert, which is not his real name, but Albert was the guy that did everything, and she wasn't really involved. And who knows what happened? I don't know. I don't know what happened. Let me juxtapose and contrast that with Ruth. Ruth actually did a lot of the question asking of me when I met with her and her husband, Bill. And whenever she didn't understand something, she spoke up. She says, I don't know what that is, David. Explain that to me. And during these routine meetings we would have over the years, she would ask me questions. And the other thing that was interesting is Bill would remind me that his primary concern was that Ruth would be taken care of if something happened to him. In fact, one time, I'll never forget this, I surprised them when they came in, and I made Bill sit in the corner. I pushed his chair back away from the table because he was very concerned what would happen if something happened, how she would get along. And so I pushed his chair kind of back and pulled Ruth over to the center of the table, so it was me sitting with her. And I went through her finances with her and share with her what she would do and what it would look like and how her situation would be. And I'm glad I did that, because a few years later, it was Ruth who was back in my office. Bill had died. And because of her active participation, Ruth knew what to do. She knew who to see and where the money was invested. Very different than Abigail, the story I shared with you a little bit earlier. So what's the difference? Well, the obvious difference is communication, being involved. That's the difference between Abigail and Ruth. So spouses need to get the other spouse involved. You need to know where to go. In fact, that made me think of another client I work with, that the husband was talking with me and with the wife kind of there, and said something about, you know, I'd like for her to do this or being more involved, or and she said, I don't need to be worried, I'm just going to call David. But the point is, she was involved and she was there. So if you're not involved in your finances, if you're in a couple relationship, you're not involved, please get involved. If you're the one that's managing the money, you owe it to your spouse to get them involved. And the other thing, what if you get divorced? I just met with a woman who's getting divorced, and she really didn't know what they had. She's finding herself really trying to play catch up now that the divorce is about to be finalized. She didn't know about some things with their money. So get involved. And you know what? Maybe do it over a glass of wine or cook dinner. I don't know. Do it in an environment where you say, look, this is something that we need to talk about, and get involved. Lisa, I'm going to take another break. Quick break, come back. I've got another story to share with you that I think you'll find very helpful given where the market is today, and will really drive home this point. Stay tuned.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
And we're back, and I've got time for one more story. So the Dow's back up above 13,000, right? I mean, that's a, you know, one of those psychological levels or psychological thresholds. So here's a story back from 2007. You will remember this type of stuff going on. In 2007, a couple came to see me for investment advice. And what I love probably best about this story is the wife had urged her husband to visit because she was nervous that all of their money was in the market, in the stock market. They had accumulated over $500,000 through a lifetime of hard work and savings. I knew that from talking with them. They'd worked very hard. Their investments had also benefited nicely from the bull market that started in 2003. So this is 2007. You remember 2007, the market was on fire. They asked me to look at their finances, to make some suggestions on how they could get retirement income from their portfolio. And one of the things I found very, very easily and very quickly when I did my analysis is that their portfolio was a major problem. 100% of the money $500,000, 100% of it was invested in just a handful of very aggressive mutual funds. I would call them high-octane mutual funds. And so I explained to them, look, here's where you are. Here's how we can make some changes to give you income. You can rely on it. You won't run out. Here's how you can also take an overall lower level of risk, but still have money invested to help fight inflation. I'm not saying let's come out of the market completely. You don't have to go all in or all out. Now, as I explained it, I could tell the husband was getting uncomfortable. In fact, he could hear none of this. He was intoxicated by dreams of endless gains and returns, and he just couldn't make any changes. So, to cut the story short, 2008, I got another phone call. And of course, you all remember what happened 2008, 2009. That couple's high-octane portfolio had dropped from $500,000 to $250,000. It was cut in half. Now, the wife, I explained to her, because I couldn't, the husband wouldn't even talk to me. We could still do some things, but now his greed had been replaced with what I would call paralyzing regret. He just couldn't do anything. So lesson number one, drawing retirement income or trying to do that from a portfolio invested in the market is very risky. If the downturn comes, which it will, you might have to wait for recovery, and that may take a long time. And lesson number two, investing on your own, you're right there with your emotions, and that can be very stressful and cause you to make bad decisions. All right, that's all the time we have. Hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.